Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast that we make you wait to listen to sometimes.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can always reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also check out Doug Zavisha's great work on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And all of our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio and Podbean.com.
And I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And we have a Sentient Show Twitter account, which is called Wilfred. And Wilfred can be found at WFDpod on Twitter. And we are sponsored by Comicosity, the comic book website, which is excellent. That's their slogan.
Yes, we are excellent. So are comics.
But we have an extra person joining us today, and that is a Mr. Ryan Daly, who is well known in the podcasting community as the man who no podcast is too big for him to tackle. He has been doing a series on Secret Origins that goes went for a long time, had a lot of guests on it, covered every single story, different guests, everyone. And he did a fabulous job at that, but he's a madman, so now he's tackling hundreds of Batman comics on Nightcast. And he also talks about DC horror comics on Midnight, the Podcasting Hour, which is his latest show. And sometimes he talks about Black Canary and Zatanna on Power Fishnets. And what else did he do? Give Me Those Star Wars, a Star Wars podcast. So, not content to be on all those shows, he wants to be on this one. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you very much for introducing me. I have to say, when you started talking about your Sentient Show Twitter account, I was like, is that me? Are they introducing me now?
No.
I forgot about Wilfred.
Oh, don't say that. Jesus.
Is that disrespectful to Wilfred?
We're all doomed now. God, thanks a bunch.
Thank you for having me on the show. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So, Ryan, what are your feelings about the Doom Patrol?
I have none.
That's our show, folks.
Thank you. I was actually, I went back to think about this again. The first time, the first Doom Patrol comic that I ever read, and I knew about them by name and sort of reputation. I just sort of heard that Grant Morrison had done something with the Doom Patrol as I was kind of going in and out of comics in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was 2004 when I read my first Doom Patrol comic. It wasn't actually Doom Patrol. It was the Secret Origins Annual starring the Doom Patrol. And the
that
way
sounds familiar.
Yeah, it does. How I got my copy was it belonged to my then, at the time, girlfriend, her uncle. She had inherited it from him with a stack of other just sort of assorted weird comics. And the first time that I went to her house that she grew up in her bedroom, she just had these few random comics. And she was like, hey, she knew that I liked them. She kind of let me flip through them. And right there on the top was Secret Origins starring the Doom Patrol. And it had a John Byrne cover. And I was like, ooh, this is really interesting. I've never read these, but I flipped through it. And I love the character of Robot Man. And I grew to like all the others. So I bought the first DC Archives edition of the Doom Patrol. And those were the characters that I really gravitated to. And when I think of the Doom Patrol, I think of that first incarnation with Robot Man, Negative Man, Rita, the Chief. Like, those are, that is the iconic Doom Patrol. When I close my eyes, I think of those characters. Just Eight. Something about their relationship that I love.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Cool. So how widely have you read Doom Patrol? Or is it most of your exposure through your absolute fascination with our show?
You guys have certainly exposed me to some that I've never read, but I've sampled a little bit here and there. I've read the first year of the Morrison run, I think, and I read one or two issues of the call of the Kupperberg and Lytle run, like the first two or three, and maybe the first issue of the Giffen run that came out prior to the New 52.
Okay.
And now I'm current, at least at the time of this recording, I've read the first three issues of the current, the young animal Doom Patrol, which I really, really enjoy. Mm. It's mind-blowing, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think we're lucky. We're getting a much better Doom Patrol than some of the other volumes.
Mm-hmm. It felt like Gerard Way was like, you know, the Morrison Doom Patrol was okay, but we could make it really crazy if we did this. Sort of. Yeah. It seems to be what he's doing with Cave Carson and Doom Patrol.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So at this point in the show, we talk about our week in comics, but it's been a few weeks for us. So, Mike, how's your week in comics been? Or your several weeks? What have you been up to?
My several weeks in comics? Whoa, let me tell you about all the comics I've read. None. I've actually been on a cruise to New Zealand the past few weeks. We went around both islands. We managed to avoid any earthquakes whatsoever. But we did get caught in some rather nasty waves, both there and back again. And speaking of there and back again, we actually went to Hobbiton as well and checked out all the Hobbit holes. So that was a highlight.
Wow. So,
yeah, it was a good 2 weeks at sea and then a week at home to get my land legs back. Because most of last week I was quite woozy in the head with getting used to being on dry land. So yay. What about you, Paul? What have you been reading?
It's a pattern here. I haven't been reading much at all. I've been too busy. I've been busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking competition, so not getting a lot done. This segment is going brilliantly. Ryan, have you read a comic?
I have read a few.
Oh, thank God. One of us has.
I've been reading about, like, when I haven't been crying, you know, just over the state of the country after the election, I've been reading a bunch of comics, and as for research in terms of preparation for, you know, podcasts that I'm doing, I've been reading a lot of post-crisis Batman, been reading a lot of DC horror titles, but also just filling in the gaps, reading a lot of post-crisis Wonder Woman by George Perez, some of the post-crisis Superman by John Byrne and Marv Wolfman and Jerry Ordway, just picking up a bunch of things. And one of the things that I got months ago, it's just taken me a while to actually get to it on my stack, but I really recommend it. It is a graphic novel called The Black Dahlia, and it is an adaptation of a novel written by James Ellroy. They also made a movie of it about 10 years ago with Josh Hartnett and Aaron Eckhart and Scarlett Johansson. Not a good movie. I don't recommend it, which broke my heart because I loved the novel. And it's written by the same guy who wrote L.A. Confidential, which is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Right.
He wrote that book too. And they're in the same world. They're actually... L.A. Confidential is the same L.A. police, LAPD, several years later, like 5 years later. Mm-hmm. But Black Dahlia, it takes place in the 1940s, and for a long time, the movie was being developed by David Fincher, who, of course, did The Social Network, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Fight Club. He was working on the movie for a long time, and then eventually, for whatever reason, dropped out, and Brian De Palma came in and directed it. And I think it was miscast, and it wasn't very good. But based on the novel and David Fincher's treatment of it, another guy and an artist came in and basically adapted it and turned it into a graphic novel. It is a great hard-boiled, like, detective mystery set in the 1940s. It's got a lot of sex and a lot of violence. Mm-hmm. The characters aren't very likable. There's
sold.
Yeah, it's the Los Angeles Police Department, you know, prior to the civil rights. So there's racial slurs. It's a grisly type of story, but yeah, it's something when I read it, the book, I loved it. And I think the graphic novel is a good adaptation of it. So I recommend that. The Black Dahlia.
Mm. Okay. You're much more prepared than we are.
Certainly showing us up. Thanks a bunch.
This is why I have 5 shows.
All right, gentlemen, shall we all join hands and go down on Derrington Way together?
Let's. Cool.
I've been waiting for this for so long.
Well, it's been a few weeks since we went down on Derrington Way. So it's a good break for some of us and a disappointment for some others. But since we last did, the solicitations for Doom Patrol number 6 have come out, and I'll just go through these briefly. They're written by Gerard Way, art and cover by Nick Derrington, and there's a backup story by Sean Crystal, just doing the art, so I presume Gerard Way is writing that as well. Backup story, what's the backup story about?
I don't know, but don't I'm very intrigued.
Yeah. Anyway, and it has a variant cover by Sampler Man, who I Googled, and he seems to be some sort of comic collage artist, digital collage artist, which is fairly interesting.
Excellent.
Anyway, the solicitation reads, "Our first arc concludes. Wow. And the Doom Patrol is back together." clock reset.
Oh, going to have to work on the Doom clock now.
Yeah. "And their mission to take out the Vectra brings them into contact with another old friend." Is that the chief? What's going on? Anyway, secrets will be uncovered, blows will be struck, and whether they win or lose, Casey Brink's existence will be altered forever, and yours just might be too. So, 32 pages, comes out on February 22nd, 2017, a $3.99 comic for mature readers, but we're allowed to read it apparently. And it's a classic, that one.
That one never gets old, mate.
But the exciting thing about this, it had a cover which featured the Doom Patrol assembled. So, and in that cover, you can see pretty much a person who looks like Crazy Jane.
Yes.
You can see Terry Nunn. You can see Robot Man, Flex Mentallo, Negative Man. And you can see Sam, the EMT. Mm-hmm. And Lucius, I think, is the kid who's Sam's son. And we suspect that he can turn into a cat.
Yes.
And Fug was there. Good to see Fug.
Do you have to bleep that out when you say Fug?
No. We've said far fucking worse than that on this show.
Thank you, Mike.
Like a fucking crap ton of worse than that before.
Shout out to the kids who are listening with their parents.
As much as I love this cover and I love everything that Nick Derrington has done so far, I have one tiny, tiny bit that bothers me about it. And it's so stupid that it irks me this much. In the group shot, if you look down near where Jane is floating, you can sort of see Robot Man's legs behind her. And between his legs, you can see what has to be Flex Mentallo's leg.
Yeah.
And it just looks out of proportion. It looks, if you match it up with where the rest of his body is, it looks like his leg is too skinny and the knee's in the wrong place. And it... I know I shouldn't get this worked up about a comic book about a bunch of freaks and outcasts like the Doom Patrol, but there's something about it that just doesn't sit right with me. But it's just a tiny glimpse of a leg, and I shouldn't get that worked up about it, but I am, damn it.
I'm glad you've thought about it, Mike.
Hey, look, I've had 3 weeks, mate.
Yeah. But while we're talking of swearing, we should say that the next issue has been delayed. We were meant to talk about Doom Patrol number 4 next week, but according to the insider knowledge that I've heard, it won't come out until the 28th of December. So, yeah, that changes our plans for the year-end ep a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit.
They got to keep you waiting a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's our fault.
They do that for the show.
Damn it.
Yes. But we still don't know if that will push back issue 5 at all, because that's meant to come out like 3 weeks after that. So I don't know. There is a little breather in January if they want, because they have Doom Patrol number 1 director's cut coming out. So, you know, it's not like there's no Doom Patrol on the stands. But, you know, we are unsure how this will affect the forward schedule. But, you know, we'll see what happens. These things happen. So, yeah. Doom Patrol is gradually moving further back into the month. I mean, like in February, it's not coming out on the 22nd, which is almost the end of the month, whereas it's coming out in the middle of the other months until issue 4. Or it could just be issue 4 is a glitch. Who knows? Who knows? I don't know. Anyway, is that ticking? Anyone hears?
Yes.
Do you hear that too?
Yes, it's not just you, Ryan. It's the Doom Clock.
I've been hearing it for like 3 hours.
Oh, wow. You need to see someone about that.
I thought there was something in my apartment. Okay.
If you can hear that for that long, I think that means Wilfred's been spying on you, maybe.
He's really upset about that crack I made about him at the beginning of the episode.
So looking at the Doom Clock, we can see that the last book for the Doom Patrol we had was issue 3 of volume 6 by Way and Darrington and Co. So it's only been about 4 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. And I was going to say that issue 4 is just 1 week away, but now it's 3 weeks away, apparently.
Boo.
Boo. Swear,
That's
swear.
That's the longest wait we've ever had. Oh, hang on.
What are you, new? The last appearance of the Patrol as a united team was 1 year and 17 weeks ago in two different comics, All-Stars Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. But we will have them as a team united in issue 6, as Paul just told us as we were going down on Darrington Way. This week, however, in Doom Patrol history, going on sale December 5th, 1963, with a cover date of February 1964, for a mere 12 cents, was My Greatest Adventure, number 85, from Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. This story was titled The Furies from 4,000 Miles Below and saw the Patrol faced off against a pair of radioactive monsters that had been created by underground nuclear tests. Ah, science. We covered this issue all the way back. Have a guess, Paul. Have a guess what episode it was.
Oh, it would be episode 10?
Ooh, close. Episode 5.
Ah.
Oh, so close. From January of 2015. Wow, we've been doing this a while. So you can go and check that episode out for more. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
It's midnight, the podcasting hour. Hello, listeners. It's your friend, PJ Frightful. That's PJ as in podcast jockey, and I'm dropping dreadful new episodes every 2 weeks. When the clock strikes midnight, the podcasting hour shines a candle on the dark corners of DC Comics. Those supernatural sagas of Swamp Thing, Dead Man, The Spectre, and more. The podcasting hour. It's a rotating anthology series boasting the terrifying talents of Ryan Daly, Rob Kelly, Paul Hicks, Ben Avery, Doug Zavisha, and other unfortunate souls. Prepare for the unexpected, open a doorway to nightmare, and enter the houses of mystery and secrets. The moon is full, and the dark spirits are rising. For it's midnight, the podcasting hour. Coming this Halloween, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Beware.
Today on the show, we're looking at some issues in a segment we call Doomsplaining, where we explain things about the Doom Patrol. But we're looking at some issues of Brave and the Bold, issue 34 and 35. Now, this is one of the later runs of Brave and the Bold. I think it's volume 2. I'm not big on details, but that'll do. But yeah, this was a series. I think it was originally started by Mark Waid and George Perez. And it's one where creators get to scratch their team-up itch. So The Brave and the Bold traditionally, I think, was a Batman team-up comic. And in this iteration, it was just a team-up comic where two characters or teams or, you know, concepts would team up in the DC Universe. So, you know, the early issues had things like the Legion of Superheroes and the Challengers of the Unknown and Destiny and Supergirl and Lobo and Green Lantern and Batman and Blue Beetle, and it was a pretty cool series. And at some point, the creative team changed, went through a couple of changes, and J. Michael Straczynski, the man behind Babylon 5 and Ruining Superman, he came on. And so he took over the comic. And despite the reputation that J. Michael Straczynski has for ruining comics, I thought his run was pretty good. Pretty good. So Mike will be taking us through Brave and the Bold number 34, which came out in July 2010. But it's actually the actual date, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, was May 19th, 2010, my daughter's birthday. And the cover price was $2.99, edited by Joe Cavalieri, both issues. And it was written by J. Michael Straczynski, and artist was Jesus Sayers, and lettered by Rob Lee, and the colorist was Thomas S. Chu. And the cover was by Jesus Sayers as well. And the second issue, 35, which Ryan is going to take us through kindly, it was cover dated August 2010, and it actually came out June 23rd. 2010, which is about a month and a bit after my daughter's birthday.
A week and a day after mine, but you know.
Whatever. Oh, okay.
It's fine.
I was going to say, I'm not going to take you through the story kindly. It's actually, my synopsis is just like riddled with offensive language.
Wow. Thanks for the warning.
Anyway, for number 34, which is entitled Out of Time, Mike, take it away.
Out of Time, part one of two. Ooh, here we go. Nighttime in a futuristic city. A sleeping woman is suddenly awoken by an aircraft of some sort crashing outside her building. Alarms sound, and she rushes outside to investigate. She's joined by a shirtless man with dark hair, and the two of them find a man crawling from the wreckage. Wink, wink, a Doom Patrol fan. Sorry. A man with reddish hair and a blue and white costume with lightning bolts across his chest. It's only when the woman calls out to the crash survivor, Garth, that we can assume, theorize, and do a quick internet search to confirm that these are indeed the founding members of the super team of the 30th century, the Legion of Superheroes. So we have Imra Ardeen, a.k.a. Saturn Girl, Rock Kryn, a.k.a. Cosmic Boy, and Garth Ranz, a.k.a. Lightning Lad. Yeah, I had to search who they actually were when I first opened it up because there was no like intro or anything. Thanks, J. Michael. Anyway, as Imra and Rock help Garth to his feet, he explains that he was returning from a patrol run around Saturn when his ship's instruments detected a massive energy surge with a minimum output of 100 tera electron volts. Note that that's real science too, kids, not just comic book science. That's 10 to the power of 12 electron volts times 100. You're welcome. Garth soon discovered that the energy was coming from a primordial black hole, half the size of Earth's moon, but with enough power to destroy any planet in its path. And even worse, it's on a collision course for Earth. So just as Garth tells the others that his calculations have the black hole arriving in 3 to 4 weeks, which should give them more than enough time to devise a solution, Rock suddenly detects a massive flux in the Earth's magnetic field. And sure enough, the black hole is in the skies above them. The terrified trio run back into their headquarters, donning their costumes. And as the world starts crumbling around them, they realize there's nothing that they can do right now. So they have to leave for another time in their time bubble spacecraft thing. And as they race towards it, it vanishes, only to appear at the other end of the hangar. What the heck? But Rock sets the controls to have them jump ahead 24 hours, moving away from where the Earth should be at that moment. And suddenly the time bubble is floating in space above the Earth as it's torn apart and consumed by the black hole. Great. The Legionnaires deduce that because they know Earth's future does exist, due to them having previously travelled forward in time, then something must have changed the time stream. And the only solution is to travel back in time and locate someone who can control ridiculous amounts of energy so that the black hole can be destroyed. And so we cut to 20th century Earth, specifically the headquarters of the Doom Patrol, where Niles Calder, the chief, is putting Robot Man Cliff Steele and Elastigirl Rita Farr through some rigorous training exercises. Larry Trainer, aka Negative Man, he enters the room, and he and Niles discuss a containment field the chief has devised and activated, which should prevent Larry from going completely dormant when the negative being separates from his body. But that's quickly ignored because the training and chit-chat is interrupted by the sudden appearance of the time bubble. Imra says to the patrol, "We're sorry to intrude, but we're in desperate need of your help. If you don't come with us, the Earth of the future is dead." So apparently 7 minutes and 15 seconds later, the Legionnaires have explained the whole situation to the patrol. Chief tells Larry that he'll have to carry the burden on this mission. And Larry responds that he's okay with that, and, you know, what's the worst that could happen? Not realizing it's a rhetorical question, Lightning Lad replies, "Well, your essence could be pulled apart by the black hole, and so thoroughly eradicated that not even a single atom would survive." Great. Despite this sobering and pant-staining thought, both teams enter the time bubble, which again appears to have moved itself from one end of the room to the other, and they launch into the time stream. However, the time bubble begins to malfunction, and the Legionnaires open a floor panel and descend into the engine room. To save time, just imagine it's like a TARDIS, okay, gang? Bigger on the inside, etc., etc. Soon enough, Lightning Lad discovers a contaminant in the flow control systems, and it's a ball of pink and white fluff. Despite the questions from his teammates, Cosmic Boy swears it's not his fluff, even though it's the same colours as his costume. Right. With the malfunction resolved, the time bubble continues through the time stream. Rita asks Imra, "Why don't we appear next to the black hole before Garth saw it?" to which Imra goes to great lengths to explain the theoretical time paradoxes doing so would create, and Rita soon regrets asking. As Imra returns to the control console to finish the calculations for their trip, she reminds Cliff that she can read minds, at which point Cliff stops looking at her butt, apologises, and becomes thoroughly embarrassed. Yes, gang, Robot Man was copping a perv at Saturn Girl's butt. The time bubble arrives at Saturn, just near the black hole, and in preparation for exiting the bubble, the two teams begin to put on breather units, with the exception of Rita, because they don't have an expanding breather unit to take her powers into effect. And they don't have one for Cliff either, even though he voices his concern about a human brain in a robot body kind of still needing oxygen. Anyway, during this, we learn of Lightning Lad's plan. To destroy the black hole, they need it to emit more energy than it consumes, so they need to draw out particles from within it, of which one set will be captured and absorbed, while the other particles are negatively charged, so they repel away from the black hole and escape it. According to the laws of thermodynamics, if something puts out more energy than it absorbs, it will break down, which is what they'll hope will happen, because it's only a theory and it may not even work. Oh, great. So Cosmic Boy creates a magnetic bubble around Lightning Lad, Robot Man, and Larry, and launches them into the black hole, and they strike. Positive energy from Lightning Lad's lightning. Negative energy from the negative being launched from Larry's body, and Cliff's metallic body being used as a grounding force to attract the newly charged particles. Super Science Team, go! And the plan seems to be working until Rita notices the time bubble's consoles detecting a time surge. And just as weird psychedelic colours appear and Cliff begins to take some serious damage, both mentally and physically, the black hole starts dissipating. The day is saved! And so eventually the time bubble returns to the Patrol HQ. Imra comments, in the history we have of your group, you've saved the world dozens of times. Shouldn't you be called the Salvation Patrol instead of Doom Patrol? Cliff responds with, not nearly badass enough. The team say their farewells and the time bubble vanishes again. Chief enters the room, and as Rita tries to explain what they just went through, Niles remarked that this has probably been the worst day of his life. And we're left with the questions, why was it the worst day of Chief's life? And where did the pink fluff come from? Gents, your thoughts on this issue?
There's an undercurrent of kink in this comic.
Right.
Like, they find this pink fluffy white ball and they immediately assume it's part of Cosmic Boy's outfit or something.
Yes. Yeah. They blame him automatically, yes.
Yeah, and
he's got the pink color on his like classic costume, but the costume he got after this one that was redesigned, I can't remember. I don't think Mike Grell designed it, but it might have been Mike Grell's design. It looked like something out of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Wow!
He had a lot of exposed flesh, and the part that wasn't exposed was just like tight black, like around his ribs, and like yeah, if they knew that much about him, it's like oh yeah, it kind of makes sense. Assume the pink fluff came from him.
I really like this story. I think it's a great little story. One of the things I like about it is it's just a straight ahead adventure between these two teams. You know, there's Doom in the future, and they get the Doom Patrol to get involved, which is fitting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, some actual proper science in there as well, not just comic book science, which is a nice change.
Yeah, it's well researched, made up science. Yes. Yeah, but I mean, the characterizations strike me a little bit like the Doom Patrol as a team in the 60s. They're a bit like the Three Stooges. They're sort of slapping each other all the time and, you know, yelling at each other a lot. And in this, they're sort of toned down a bit.
Yeah.
Just because that would distract. Like, Cliff is often written very Ben Grimmish. Loud and opinionated and everything like this, and he's quite subdued in this, but that makes it work very well for that gag where he's just, you've got the same panel repeated a few times where Saturn Girl is bending over the console and Cliff's just standing there with his arms crossed behind her, and then in this third panel she says, "You do realize I can read minds," which is just such a great joke. And it's from an unexpected character, really.
Yeah. I do think in a way the Patrol were kind of given the supporting roles in this, and it was more about the Legionnaires' adventure in a way. But you're right, some of the characterizations are a little bit more subdued than we're used to. But yeah, I still think it was actually a decent, you know, fun story.
Yeah. But I didn't know, when I was reading it, I was going, well, he hasn't really introduced these Legionnaires, and I wondered if that would throw anyone. And it threw you, Mike, straight away.
It threw me, because I'll admit, I've read hardly any of the Legion stuff ever. But you know, I've kind of got a passing knowledge of them. So I literally had to do an internet search to make sure I had my facts straight before I started doing my notes. And you know, I just put that out there that some sort of introduction would have been handy.
Yeah. And one of those super nerds from the Legion of Super Bloggers could probably tell us when this takes place based on their costumes and hairstyles and things like that.
Well, I actually thought about that because these three, Lightning Lad, Cosmic Boy, and Saturn Girl, are the three founding members. Mm. Yes. They were the original group. So, and the way Straczynski approaches them, I mean, I think he... I don't know if he has a better handle on the Doom Patrol characters, but he at least gives them a little bit more personality just from their dialogue. You know, I think Robot Man and Negative Man come off as you really kind of get them, and they have a sort of sardonic wit at times, and I think that plays to Straczynski's talents. But the Legion characters are all pretty flat, which is probably true of how they were written in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I did notice is that at this point in their history, if it's really just the three of them, they should be in their mid to late teens. And that's not the way Jesus Saez draws them.
No.
I actually think this is further down the Legion timeline because there are other characters around. They're just not featured in this story. So it just focuses on the three founders. But as we see in the issue that you're about to cover, Ryan, there are other Legionnaires or... wannabe Legionnaires about, so but they're just not featured in this at this point. So I think they are a bit older when they were, you know, the roster had expanded. But once again, it's a job for the Legion of Super Bloggers to tell us where this is. Paging Dr. Ange.
There you go.
Because he's a doctor, so.
Right. Okay.
So that joke works. Yeah.
Yeah. Well done.
It gets better when it's explained, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, all the time, yeah.
Speaking of explanations, I really like how Saturn Girl has to explain to Rita why they have to go back to the time after Lightning Lad saw the black hole, not before, because otherwise they wouldn't know about the danger that it presents. So that whole sort of train of causality and consequences I think is hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a really good scene, and I did feel sorry for Rita after she asked it.
Yeah, but there's the weird little things in the comic where that, like, the time bubble is moved across the room a couple of times with that explanation. There's the fluffy ball thing that they find in the engine room. I like the idea that there's an engine room below the floor. That's just a bit of Joe Straczynski thinking about the science of a time bubble and practical side. So it's got
So that wasn't like a regular thing in the Legion?
I've never seen that before. No, okay. I think it's a little bit of extrapolation based on, I don't know, just exploring the concept a bit further than they did in the comic. Well, maybe. But I personally find the Legion of Superheroes enormously attractive just as a concept, and it's one of those things that just often comes over me in waves that I'm just dying to read the Legion suddenly, and I can't explain it. It's just one of those things that, you know, I get Legion fever every now and again.
Okay.
I mean, they're all young and sexy and optimistic and they have great big crazy adventures and they're all dating each other. And
thought you were going to say great big something else. But...
Oh, Mike. I could read minds now, Mike. Yeah, but that's the Legion. It's, you know, it's like crazy 90210 in space. It's...
Maybe that's why it's never appealed to me. I'm kind of the complete opposite of you. I can't recall ever seeing anything that made me want to rush out and read anything of the Legion. They were just like, okay, teen superheroes in space in the future. Okay. It was like, yeah, I similar to you, I can't explain why they've never appealed to me. It's just, you know, one of those things, I guess.
Maybe it's just you're a Legion person or you're not.
Maybe.
So you crossed over recently, didn't you, Ryan?
I used to have no interest in them at all, and I forced myself to read some for the sake of the Secret Origins podcast. And even though, like, I read the Mark Waid run that he did in the early 2000s, and I loved that, but I don't think it made me a Legion lover. It wasn't until I checked out the Great Darkness saga by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz that it sort of it clicked for me, and I got what was special about these characters. And I will say that they don't really act or look like teenagers by the time they get to that point in their history. They're functionally grown-ups.
Right.
So it's pretty much just a big damn super team with lots of different powers and lots of different worlds. And the hardest thing to keep track of is their names. Like, their code names are fine. If you've read superhero comics for any length of time, you can figure out who Ultra Boy is and what his deal is. But the Rock Kryns, the Garth Ranz, the Imras, like, who? I still don't know half of their real names.
I think that may have actually been a deterrent to me, is that every time I've seen stuff about the Legion itself, the cast just seems to be so gigantic.
Yeah,
I think it's just been like, whoa, too many people to keep track of there. So maybe that's what's turned me off it.
And my favorite run was the 5 years later run where they didn't use any code names at all. And that was a series I read with the Legion's Who's Who open next to me just to, you know, because I was just starting to get familiar with everything at that point. Yeah, but... It's one of those things that if you endeavor to enjoy it, there are real rewards, and it's something special. And I really hope that someone revives it and gets it going in a viable way that sort of captures some of the magic.
So there hasn't been any sort of whispers of it being part of Rebirth then?
Oh, there were hints in the Rebirth special. I think there's at least one.
Saturn Girl was there. She wasn't named, but you could tell that Saturn Girl was there in the Rebirth special. Ooh. And I think it was either Jeff Johns or Dan DiDio or somebody said, we will bring the Legion back, but it has to be the right time, and it has to be, we have to do it right. We're not just going to rush out and do it just so that we have a Legion book. We need to have sort of the right approach for it. Okay. So that could be suggesting that they have something in mind. It's just taken a while, or that could be them just a stalling tactic, saying, "Yeah, we're not doing anything with them right now."
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, they want to do it right. I mean, the New 52 stuff wasn't very good, and it really needs to be, given a real fresh coat of paint, I think. And
I mean, they know that there is a fan base for the Legion. At one point, it was DC's highest selling property. A whole Legion of super fans who love these characters. They would buy the book if it's on the stands. So DC knows that it's out there. They're just, a way of putting Batman on the team? That would sell well.
But they have to rebirth it so that everyone wants to read it, because the Legion fans have been, you know, fairly disappointed with what's, you know, been served up to them as Legion for the last, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 years. Legion lost the one in the present day as part of the New 52. That wasn't the Legion. It was just some characters with the same names and things like that. Yeah. Anyway, enough about the Legion.
Yeah, let's talk about some better teams than the Legion.
Though it does open the door for a Waiting for the Legion podcast at this point.
Spinoff.
It's the Legion clock.
God, don't give me ideas, guys.
It's Computo, the sentient show Twitter account.
Oh, geez.
Sorry. Shall we move on to issue 35?
Let's do it.
Out of Time, part 2 of 1. No, part 2 of 2. At the secret headquarters of the Legion of Substitute Heroes, Polar Boy, Night Girl, Fire Lad, Stone Boy, and Chlorophyll Kid watch the nightly news report on the Legion's team up with the Doom Patrol to stop the primordial black hole from destroying the Earth before it happens. Chlorophyll Kid speculates if the Legion stopped the threat before it happened, then there is no proof the threat ever really existed. In which case, what's to stop the Legion from making up the story just to get some good publicity? Nightgirl says the Legion of Superheroes is far too honorable to do something like that. The Legion of Substitute Heroes, though? That's another matter. Fire Lad suggests they shore up some good publicity of their own by stopping the primordial black hole before the Legion does. Since the subs know how the Legion did it, they can travel back in time and steal the plan for themselves. The subs sneak into the Legion's headquarters and steal the time bubble. They take it forward in time 1 hour, so when they appear, there are two time bubbles. They leave the original one in its place and take the time duplicate. Assuming traveling through time will be easy, because, hey, why wouldn't it be? The subs jump back in time to where the black hole first appeared on the edge of their solar system near Saturn. But as they arrive, the black hole is affected by the quantum gate, causing it to jump forward along the same course the subs jump back. This explains why the black hole inexplicably moved faster than Lightning Lad expected last issue, and why, when the subs turn around, they witness the black hole utterly decimating the Earth, pulling every last chunk of rock into its maw. So, yeah, the subs screwed up and destroyed the Earth, but they still have a chance to save everything by traveling back in time the way the Legion did. Of course, it's all going to be fine. All going to be fine.
Right, right.
Back in the early 21st century, the Legion of Superheroes and the Doom Patrol set off in their own time bubble, which Saturn Girl notices seems to be in a different place than where they left it, to stop the black hole. No sooner does the Chief watch one time bubble vanish than he sees a second bubble containing the subs arrive in its place. Fire Lad asks the Chief if they can talk to the Doom Patrol. He can't understand why they arrived after the Legion when he set the time bubble's coordinates to arrive half an hour before them. After recapping their story for the Chief, Dr. Calder posits that the relative time stream is off by an hour because they took the first time bubble ahead 1 hour. Fire Lad insists that's an easy problem to correct and takes the subs back in the time bubble to recalibrate by jumping back again.
Oh, God.
This does not work out how we expected, as the Chief is subjected to a repeated loop of substitute time bubbles constantly reappearing in the lab, with Fire Lad asking to see the Doom Patrol. As the Chief deals with that, the subs, we'll just call them the Prime Subs, are stuck in time with no sense of orientation. Nightgirl takes over the controls and rides the time current to the 1970s and the nearest super team that can help them. As the time bubble crashes to a stop in some point in time, Stoneboy braces for the impact by turning into stone and staying that way. When the four remaining conscious substitute heroes look up, they see the team they've come to recruit. But it's not Robot Man and Negative Man and Elastigirl. Instead, they're facing Merry Man, Awkward Man, the White Feather, the Blimp, and Dumb Bunny, better known as, better being a relative term, the Inferior Five. Fire Lad explains to the Inferior Five the threat they face in the future. Well, he tries to explain it to them. Dumb Bunny is pretty dumb and doesn't grasp the mechanics of causality, and Fire Lad isn't much smarter because his explanation is terrible, which is why it takes 2 hours before Nightgirl tells everyone to shut up and get in the bubble. While the two teams crowd onto the bubble, stepping over Stoneboy, Nightgirl plots the coordinates to intercept the black hole so the subs and the five can use the Hawking Theorem before the Legion of Doom Patrol does. Only then does the White Feather ask what the Hawking Theorem is. None of the subs actually know the answer to or how to simulate it. While the heroes argue and bump into each other and get handsy with Dumb Bunny, Nightgirl decides to get the information straight from the theoretical horse's mouth. The time bubble suddenly appears in the classroom of Professor Stephen Hawking. Or it would if DC could afford to license his name and likeness. Instead, they arrive in the presence of the man who created the Hawking Theorem, Professor Stephen Hawking. Nightgirl asks Professor Hawking to explain the Hawking Theorem, which he attempts to do over the next 6 hours. Finally, inexplicably, Dumb Bunny simplifies the principles of the theory by telling the others that they need to put the primordial black hole on a diet, forcing it to burn more energy than it absorbs. With this knowledge, the two sets of, oh, we'll call them heroes, jump back in the time bubble. Nightgirl sets their course for the future while the others explore the fourth dimensional sub-basement where they can at least stretch out a little. That doesn't actually help, though, because Awkward Man trips and pushes Dumb Bunny into one of the flow control systems. The machine starts buzzing and sputtering. Polar Boy pulls her out, but Dumb Bunny lost her pink fluffy tail in the machine. She wants to go back in there, not just to retrieve her tail, but to re-experience the warm vibratory sensation. Night Girl tells them all to quit messing around and get back up top. Then she tells them the time bubble has stopped moving forward, that whatever Dumb Bunny has done has broken the time bubble. Merryman points out that while they can't go forward anymore, they can go back in time to retrieve a functional time bubble, and they know where and when one will be. Back in the headquarters of the Doom Patrol, the Legion of Superheroes has just arrived, asking for help. The Chief leads the Legion and the Patrol into another room to hear the situation. Once they're gone, the substitute time bubble shows up on the other side of the training room. The subs and the Five dash out of their broken time bubble and take the other one that the Legion of Superheroes just arrived in. A few minutes later, the Legion and the Doom Patrol come back to embark on their mission, and Saturn Girl observes that the time bubble isn't in the same place where they parked it. Blimp and Dumb Bunny worry that the Legion might get stuck in time when they take the faulty time bubble, but Stone Boy assures them that the Legion will figure it out. And figure it out they do when Lightning Lad finds Dumb Bunny's pink fluffy tail in the flow control system, a pink fluffy tail that he assumes belongs to Cosmic Boy. The subs and the Five pilot their time bubble to intercept the black hole before it's near the Earth, but to their horror, the other time bubble with the Legion and the Doom Patrol arrives there too. The subs should have gotten there well ahead of the Legion, but earlier, Fire Lad recalibrated the bubble to offset them originally being 1 hour off, and that recalibrated time bubble is the one they swapped with the Legion.
Oh, God.
So now, the Legion of Superheroes and the Doom Patrol arrive in time to apply the Hawking Theorem by flooding the black hole with positive and negative energy, and they will save the day and get all of the credit, and no one will know the Legion of Substitute Heroes had anything to do with it. Well, that's unacceptable to Fire Lad, who creates a temporal wave intending to shoot the Legion and the Doom Patrol closer to Earth, but the black hole is caught up in the wave and follows them, the heroes, on their path. Yes, Fire Lad just sent the black hole to Earth for the second time. But miraculously, as Dumb Bunny notes, the black hole begins to collapse. Of course, none of them realize that the temporal wave actually accelerated the thermodynamic process in the black hole, causing it to collapse. So in truth, Fire Lad's reckless action did save the day. But none of them are smart enough to realize that. They think the Legion of Superheroes saved the future once again. Sure, the substitute heroes could take the time bubble back for another spin and try the stunt again, but they realize it's best not to press their luck. The Inferior Five ask to join the subs in the future, but none of the subs want to spend any more time with the Five, so they kick them out of the time bubble somewhere in the past. Not the 1970s, though, where they come from. Instead, the Inferior Five are dropped off in the then-current year 2010. With no friends and no family in this era, the Five wonder what will become of them. Will anyone give them a home or something to do? The Five Inferior Heroes stare doe-eyed at the reader, hoping to guilt you into demanding further appearances of these forgotten heroes. Then they set off, wondering if Dan DiDio will give them a chance. That is the end of Brave and the Bold, issue 35.
Wow.
Well, I must say, it's a revelation to see Jesus Sayer's comedy chops at work in this. It's JLI worthy.
I noted that going back over issue 34, the first one, I thought the art was stiff. And I really like the way Jesus Sayer, like his figure work, the way he designs characters. Mm-hmm. They're always like perfectly on model. It looks like something that you would design for an action figure line. They're really, really good. But I thought in the first story, it was just a lot of characters standing around talking, and there wasn't that much of a sense of motion or energy to the story. I think with this chapter, and maybe it was because Straczynski's script lent itself better to that, there's much more comedy, there's much more physical activity, the characters are doing things. I think the art is a lot better in this chapter. It's just, it's more fun to read.
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how funny and warped this issue is compared to the straight up superheroics of the preceding one. Even the covers, you know, on the cover of 34, the Legion and the Patrol standing there, you know, ready for action and cover of 35, you're just looking at it going, who the heck are these guys? Like, if I knew only a little bit about the Legion of Superheroes, I knew even less about the Inferior Five and the Legion of Substitute Heroes. I think the most I've seen of either of those is ads back in DC Comics when I was a kid for whatever books they appeared in at the time, and that's it. I know even less of them, but I wasn't that concerned about having to do a Google search on any of them because, you know, you kind of figured it out as you're going along, and there was a lot more fun. So I just wanted to keep reading straight into it, yeah.
I think this is the only story I've read with the Inferior Five.
Okay.
I can't think of another place where I've read them.
Yeah. But it's so much fun. And, I mean, Night Girl ends up playing like Mother Hen to them all. And it takes its toll on her as the comic goes on.
That last panel where, you know, the subs are just sort of, you know, glaring at the Inferior Five right at the end, like, get off our time bubble. We don't care where we leave you. And when the Five are like making those, you know, those doe eyes at the reader, you feel so bad for her.
I would love to know how Straczynski wrote these two issues and whether he wrote them together, like plotted the whole thing with both parts, or if he wrote them consecutively. If he wrote issue 34, allowing for these weird little moments that don't make sense, figuring that, okay, the next time I write, I have to explain this. I would just be kind of fascinated to find out if he wrote this in sequence, in order.
I would hope that he had plotted both issues out together. Otherwise, oh man, I don't know how else he could have done it. But, you know, tip of my hat to him if he did do them in sequence, that could, because that's crazy.
Yeah. But the characters, I mean, you got Night Girl who has a beehive. It's got this sort of little bit of an Elvira thing going.
Mm.
And Chlorophyll Kid looks like he's got a tree on his shirt, but actually looks like a piece of broccoli.
He does.
And Stone Boy's barriers to turn into a stone. So when things get rough, he just turns into a stone on the floor.
Right. And again, it's a weird sort of story that Straczynski does. It's kind of funny. Like it seems like he picks up these groups of characters just because they're from the future. Because if you looked at the first story in chapter 34. Like, okay, Lightning Lad, Cosmic Boy, they use their powers at the end, and nominally Saturn Girl says she's keeping them in contact telepathically, but it's not like a standout like showcase of their powers in that issue. And this one too, like Chlorophyll never uses his power, Night Girl never uses her power, Polar Boy never uses it, Fire Lad never, the only one of the subs who uses his power is Stone Boy, who has the ridiculous gimmick of just turning into stone and then not waking up, so he's just a lump there for half the time. So it's like it's more about how they're ineffectual and how they're not ready for prime time superhero status than like really a showcase of what they can do, because what they can do isn't helpful 99% of the time.
I'm still trying to figure out what Dumb Bunny's power is.
Don't.
She's hot.
Right, that's it. Right, eye candy, basically. Right, good. Great, we sorted that one out.
There's some great little gags in this comic where she's leaning on the blimp character and sort of her hands resting on his chest, and he says, you know, that's not actually an air valve, not that I mind.
A little bit risque how she wanted to go back into the hot vibrating piece of machinery. But yeah, overall, this was a lot of fun, if kind of wacky and kind of sciencey and over the top, but yeah, overall the two parts together, I think they make a really good fun story.
Yeah. And it's a damn shame this one has never been collected. Like, the hardcover and the trade that came out of this run stop at the Doom Patrol issue just before it.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. And it really disappointed, because I think maybe Straczynski's run ended abruptly. I think he was planning to do more than these two issues, so I think they kind of figured that they would have two collections of his work on Brave Them.
I'm certain that this series actually did go a couple more
It did
issues.
With a different creator, yeah.
There we
it
go.
It did with a different creator.
Yeah, because I, for years, have... given Straczynski's history of quote unquote ruining things, I have for years blamed him for the demise of this series, which I really enjoyed. And I've got all the, you know, initial trades of like the first stories of the Wade stuff, and, you know, a good chunk of the single issues from the latter stuff, including this story as well. And I think the last one had Magog in a story.
That would have been Giffen, probably.
Yeah, it may have been. I can't recall. But yeah, and then I'm sure that was the final one that ever appeared, and then the whole series just vanished, and there was nothing ever said about it ever again.
I think Dwayne McDuffie did some Milestone stuff.
Milestone,
yeah.
There is a collection of the Milestone stuff, yeah. So that would have been before this stuff even. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, Straczynski's run had a lot of like heady things. There was an episode or an issue with Green Lantern and Dr. Fate that was all about fate versus free will.
Mm-hmm.
There was one with Aquaman and the Demon Etrigan, which is one of my favorite standalone comics, just because it's basically throwing Aquaman against some Lovecraftian nightmare demons from the deep, which is awesome. And then you've got this wonderful with a wonderful story with Cliff Chang as the guest artist with Wonder Woman, Zatanna, and Batgirl.
Yes, that was great.
Without spoiling it, when you get to the end of it, once you realize what the whole story has been leading to, it's heartbreaking.
Mm.
So his whole run had all of these like really strong moments, and there's a Flash and Blackhawk one that's about, you know, war and whether you can kill in war and stuff. Like, he brings up all of these really important kind of concepts and things to think about, and then he ends it just with this silly, ridiculous time travel story that is a really nice sort of palate cleanser, and it's like, oh, this is a nice little breather. So I wish these two issues had been part of that collection.
It really ought to be reprinted, that one.
Yeah.
It's full of great stories, and that Batgirl story is that's probably one of the best stories that came out that year.
Agreed.
Well, yeah, I just looked it up on Mike's Amazing World of Comics, and they did end the run at this point, and the Milestone issues were before J. Michael Straczynski took over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought that was after. For some reason, I had them reversed in my mind. I thought the Milestone ones came after this.
I've got, like, I think four trades of this Brave and the Bold series, and I think the Milestone stuff is the fourth one, I think, so...
Yeah,
but I really wish they would bring the concept back in Rebirth. You know, it's fun to see, like one of my favorite stories from earlier in this series was Lobo and Supergirl together. Just completely unexpected stuff like that. But you know, good fun. Mm-hmm.
No, it's a great little run, and maybe JMS did leave unexpectedly, and that became his real thing with DC. Like his terrible Superman run where he. took Superman and Wonder Woman out of the Justice League so he could do exclusive stories with them and then abandoned them.
Even his own creator-owned stuff, Rising Stars, that just seemed to vanish into nowhere, because I was reading that as well, and what do you know, it vanished. I think it did come back at some stage, but by that time it was like years later.
So, a fun issue, two fun issues, in fact. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. Go out and get them. They're good standalone stories that you can't get in a trade, so get them on Comicosity. No, Comixology, not Comicosity. Once they sponsor you, you just can't get away from them. But I think we might call it a day for Doomsplaying at this point.
Sounds good.
Batman Nightcast, a thrilling new podcast from the Fire and Water Podcast Network, hosted by Ryan Daly
and Chris Franklin. Nightcast chronicles the Caped Crusaders' adventures in Batman and Detective Comics after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Highlights from this legendary era include
Batman number 400,
Legends,
Mike Barr and Alan Davis,
Batman Year 1,
Batman Year 2,
Max Allen Collins, the new Jason Todd, Millennium?
You're not doing this right. Let me take over. Alan Grant and Norm Breyfogle.
Alan Grant from Jurassic Park?
Did you hear me say Norm freaking Breyfogle?
Oh, yeah.
Son of the Demon.
The Killing Joke.
A Death in the Family.
Batman Year 3.
A Lonely Place of Dying.
Alan Grant, Alan Davis, Max Allen Collins. Why are there so many people named Alan from this era of Batman?
The Rise of Tim Drake.
Legends of the Dark Knight.
And that's just up until 1989.
Did anything exciting happen with Batman after that?
You'll have to tune in to find out.
Batman Nightcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Find it on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Oh, we forgot to mention your favorite issue, when Batman fires Dick Grayson.
You want to find another co-host?
So it's time for question of the week. And last time on the show, we asked you who or what is the worst fictional artificial intelligence. And we heard from Jonathan Dick on Twitter's at real last name. He said HAL 9000. Yeah, good call.
We heard from Aaron Long at Juice005, and he said that robot, what is on page of Uncanny X-Men 221, that page near the back in the lower panel.
Right.
No, Aaron.
No. Oh, look, we heard from Ryan Daly at RyanDaly01, and he said Holly from Red Dwarf is both the best and the worst artificial intelligence.
I was probably drunk when I wrote that, so don't give that any credence.
It's a good call though. It's true, yeah. You know. Holly had their good and their bad points. Yeah.
We heard from Astrakis one at he's called We Term Eve Chili Tank, and he said the MCP from Tron, the Master Control Program. Ooh,
he was a bastard. Yeah.
He was.
Rifty at Rift 1821 said worst as in bad Skynet. Worst as in incompetent, intelligence from Team America. That is very bad intelligence.
we heard from Ange, Dr. Ange70 on the Twitter, and he said, eep, forgot to answer. Computo from Legion, that bastard. We mentioned Computo before. Brainiac5 created Computo.
Right. Okay. See, I've got to catch up on all this Legion stuff. I'm so out of the loop.
You never will.
FK Jason Kringle at FK Jason said that irritating brat from the film AI. Never seen such a stupid supercomputer in the body of a little boy. Teddy was awesome though.
We heard from Obi-Wan, that's Shmobi-1, and he said Robbie the robot from Forbidden Planet always came across to me as kind of goofy, but hard to go past HAL 9000. Robbie the robot is awesome. That is just the best design ever. I love Robbie the robot.
Right. Craig 101 at Craig R. MacD on Twitter said Computo also.
We hear from Nicholas at Nick RDE, and another vote for Hal from 2001. No sense of humor, bad at opening pod bay doors.
Yep. David Ennis replied over on the Facebook page, and he said the Guardian of Forever for breaking Kirk's heart for that week at least.
Hello, David. I don't think we've had David Ennis respond before.
I think he's commented on the Facebook page. Anyway, good answer.
Okay. Ryan, are you sticking with your answer that it's Hal? Oh, Holly. Holly.
Today, if I revise my answer, I might say Red Tornado. and preview, you will actually hear me talk about how much I dislike Red Tornado on the next episode of Power of Fishnets.
Wow.
Which should come out just before Christmas. So.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Looking forward to that.
Well, what about you, Paul?
I'm going to go with Hector from Saturn 3. Anyone remember Saturn 3?
No.
It's a sci-fi film starring Kirk Douglas and Farrah Fawcett.
Wow, okay. And there's
a robot in that was programmed with bad brains, like abnormal, you know. Psychotic brain power behind it.
What? played by Farrah Fawcett?
No, the robot wasn't. But it was one of those films that was just like a riding the wave of Alien, and that sort of when sci-fi horror was cool. And it did a really bad job. So, but
right.
Yeah, it had this great big robot called Hector that was very unmenacing.
Okay. I was going to say HAL 9000 because that film freaked me out, the fact that a computer could go bad when I first saw it as a child. But I'm going to say Bishop from Alien.
He was cool.
He was not cool. He was bad.
No, Ash was bad from Alien.
Okay. Bishop. No, maybe I'm thinking of Ash.
Yeah, Ash was the one trying to shove a newspaper down Ripley's throat.
I do apologise. I'm thinking of Ash. It's very late. I'm very tired.
Bishop rocked.
Sorry, yes, yeah. Bishop was a good one. Okay, Ash is the one I'm thinking of. There we go. Crisis solved. Good God. Such professional, very good isms and stuff. Wow.
Just imagine if you had stuck with HAL 9000, that all could have been avoided.
I just couldn't keep my mouth shut, could I? No, I had to go that extra step and fuck it up.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, does that bring things to a close, Mike? Are we getting any more bits of business?
No, that's it, I think. Take us home, Paul.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody.
What's the next question going to be?
Wait for it. What's a cool thing that is the same age as you?
Ooh. Right. So now we'll get to find out how old everyone is, too.
Well, only if you say how old the thing is as well. But anyway, that's the next question. If you would like to respond to the next question of the week, you can get in touch with us on Twitter via at WFDpod, via Wilfred. You can send us an email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. There's the Facebook page as well. You can put your answer there. This week, I'd really like you to encourage everyone to visit mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com and leave their answer there, because Doug does a great job building these threads and putting up the visuals. And he will have all the pictures from, not all the pictures, but a lot of the key pictures from tonight's comic. Mm-hmm. So, or today's comics, depending on what time you're listening to us. Yes, yep. You could be in a, you know, sort of deprivation chamber and not know what time of day it is and listening. So, whatever.
You could be in a time bubble. You know,
you could be in a time bubble,
sitting on a hot vibrating machine.
Yeah. Anyway, go visit mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. What's the address? mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. I'm saying a lot because I don't know if people know how to find it.
Right.
But, terrific Doom Patrol blog done by Doug. So get that going, everyone.
Yep.
It's the cool thing. And next time when we meet, we will be talking about Doom Patrol Volume 1, Issue 119 and Issue 120.
Ooh, right at the end.
Yeah, the pointy end of Volume 1. Mm. Yeah. So thank you, Ryan, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. It's it's good to have another person on the show occasionally.
And I agree.
Especially on a show that ran so smoothly as this one.
What are you saying, Paul?
Oh, no.
Anyway. Hopefully the audience won't know what you're talking about.
No. And Mike will spend 3 days editing this one.
To clue the audience in, we may have had some technical issues with this episode. Maybe.
Maybe.
Just 10 interruptions in the call.
You were counting? Oh my God.
This episode was recorded over a 4-week period.
Yes. Oh dear. Oh, I'm going to have fun editing this one. Anyway, let's sign off there, chaps. It's been fun. It's been real. We'll catch everyone again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.